my life now is the best it's ever been.
Yeah.
From both financial security, emotional relationship,
friends. You're friends with me now.
I've never had any friends.
You're friends with me, so your life is doing a lot better now. We talk every day.
Acquaintances.
Friends.
People I know.
Close friends.
Acquaintance.
Best friends. Hey, what's going on, guys? On this episode of Drugs and Stuff, we have steroids in the news, an unusual outcome to a steroid bust. Then after that, we have listener questions, Proviron as part of your TRT plan, using insulin to control blood sugar issues while taking MK-677. We discuss blood pressure and steroids, plus we discuss anxiety while using anabolics, plus a bunch more. We're all going to do that right now here on Drugs and Stuff. Hey, what's up, guys? Welcome back to Drugs and Stuff. I'm Scott McNally, and of course, I'm here with Dave Crossland. Our programming is all brought to you by TrueNutrition.com and GetAzoff.com. We had some feedback from the last episode. Danny Bossa joined us. We talked all about TRT. Basically, I mean, what it came down to, I mentioned it to you before the show, but what it came down to was there were definitely some people that felt challenged by some of the stuff Danny was saying.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, we got Danny on because he's not quite a 180 opinion from us, but it's very much a different opinion from us.
Yeah.
And you know, people may have suspected that we went to town and we had arguments, but they would have just been counterproductive. There was no point as throwing mud at each other.
Yeah,
I wanted to hear what Danny had to say, and I wanted to hear his opinions and why. And some of the stuff, yes, we agreed on, and some of the stuff we don't agree on. And I think what people need to realize is that we're all entitled to opinion, and we form that opinion over experience and over knowledge acquired, be that from a direct source, i.e. a research paper or something, or secondhand from somebody else who imparts knowledge on us.
Right, or our own personal experience, anecdotal evidence. Yeah.
And there's nothing wrong with somebody challenging that with an opposing view.
Sure.
Now, as I currently stand, I do not agree with Danny's thoughts on estrogen or Danny's thoughts on dosing. That might change in 5 years.
Hmm, yeah.
You know, I mean, I've recently looked at TRT dosing personally, and my TRT dosing is what most people would call ridiculously low.
I would call it ridiculously low. Unless it was every day instead of every week. Then you'd be good.
You know, I am on a substantially low dose. I'm on 50 milligrams a week. But at 100 milligrams, I was double the range.
Yeah.
And as a result of that, I was having upregulation problems with red blood cells.
Yeah.
You know, and there was, I didn't see the podcast being productive if we ended up just going, oh, no, that's not right.
Yeah.
I felt it was much better to let Danny give him his head to a degree. I mean, yeah, there was discussion, but, and let him get his opinion across.
Absolutely.
And then people can then go away, and obviously they know our opinion. We ram it down their throats every week. but people can go away and make their own decisions based on what they've heard and what they feel is correct. Or they can go and, if anything else, I've always felt that speaking to someone with an opposing opinion is very, very beneficial, because what you should do in that situation, you shouldn't turn around and go, well, you know, you're wrong.
Yeah.
That's the end of the conversation.
Shut it off.
So, yeah. Okay, let me have a look at what you're saying and let it challenge my thoughts. And then if at the end of that process I come back to the same belief, then my thoughts are more robust.
Yeah.
If, however, I come back at the process and go, you know what, you might have a point with this, or you might have a point with... That's how we learn and grow.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
You know, I've been taught weird stuff by the oddest of people at the strangest of times.
We definitely want to give people that freedom to make your own decisions. One thing I will say, and it does relate to that conversation, I would be very careful to base your beliefs off of anything that sounds like an absolute.
because there are no absolutes.
I listened with, I didn't agree with everything. No, I agreed with some things, but it was very, very interesting to see that almost, not quite polar opposite, but that much higher dose than I'd ever considered to run for TRT approach, and his thoughts on it and his experiences on it. And it'll be interesting to see, you know, long term, if my fears bear out or if I'm just sat here being a silly old twat, not really knowing what I'm talking about.
All right. Well, with that said, we have drugs in the news. Dave, today I have just one story, and this comes to us from Belfast. Where's Belfast at?
Northern Ireland.
Northern Ireland. Are steroids legal in Northern Ireland?
Northern Ireland runs under the same regulation law as UK does, in that possession is legal, supply is illegal.
Okay. The owner of an East Belfast fitness outlet who supplied anabolic steroids to clients was spared jail time yesterday. Hugh McQuaid. That sounds like a very... sounds like a very Irish name. Hugh McQuaid received a 16-month prison sentence, suspended for 2 years, after he admitted supplying a variety of anabolic steroids to customers over an 8-month period. The 50-year-old owner of HM Sports admitted to possessing criminal property amounting to just over 128,000 pounds following a police search of his business premises in February of 2018. The defendant appeared via video link. Let's see. McQuaid's business was searched, seizing cash, a phone, other equipment, including an iPad. I had a question here for you. So Judge David McFarland said that while there was a demand for anabolic steroids for bodybuilding and to assist in the recovery of injury, they are controlled substances, Class C drugs, that were regulated, quote, for a purpose. This purpose, the judge explained, was to provide a degree of protection from the public, given the harmful side effects that can arise from taking these drugs, except under medical supervision and for a therapeutic purpose. So he said that the judge said there was no evidence that McQuaid was stockpiling steroids and that the supply was likely to reflect customer-based demand. So what does this exactly mean? He basically, he got his sentence suspended in this case because he was not trying to push extra steroids on people. He was just meeting demand.
There's not really enough evidence or information to really know what they were thinking. I've got a couple of ideas, but they could be wrong. The first thing is, obviously, suspended sentence basically means it doesn't matter what offence he commits in the next 2 years. If he commits a criminal offence, he can potentially automatically go to jail for this offence for the period of time stipulated.
Okay.
So not for speeding or something like that, but arguments say he got in a fight and caused an assault, and it was proven he was guilty of assault. He could potentially have this sentence added on top, or he could be potentially arrested for this sentence immediately and sent to prison while he dealt with the second offence.
Oh, I see.
Now, what's not clear is it mentions a couple of figures, 128,000. What it doesn't clear up is, On the bit I've got, it says turning to the 112,000 and whatever pence and the 1,850 seized from the premises. Now, I'm not sure if what they mean is they received 1,850 from the premises and 112,000 was previous profits that they could show.
Oh.
Or whether they actually seized £112,000 from the premises and 1,850 from the premises.
Hmm.
It would appear to me that what they've said, and he's done very, very well with this, because he's talking about 130 grand effectively of illicit trade. What the judge appears to have said is that because he has a family and he has a business, which is a stand-up in its own right, successful business,
yeah,
that sending him to prison wouldn't really benefit anybody. Huh. In fact, it would. One of the things they consider when sentencing in the UK someone to prison is the effect on the people that are dependent on that person.
Oh.
So So we have a family and we have a business that obviously supports the community and helps the local economy and everything else. The other thing that's very key potentially in this is they talk about the POCA, which is the proceeds of crime.
Okay.
Now, if they actually seized £112,850 from him in cash,
yeah,
then effectively they're going to take that money as proceeds of crime, which is what the POCA hearing's about. Oh. The POCA hearing establishes a value that you've earned from your illicit trade.
Yeah.
And then establishes how you're going to pay that value to the court. So if someone could prove that you'd been selling drugs for 5 years and you'd made £2 million,
yeah,
then your POCA would potentially be £2 million.
Huh, okay. Huh.
And so the court would say you have to pay the court £2 million.
Wow, so that's like you were dealing drugs, which was wrong. We're going to now take that money from you and that'll make it right.
So that you don't profit from the illegal action. So not only will you go to prison to serve for the crime you've committed, but you will also pay all the money that we can prove you earned illegally.
Yeah.
Because you should never have had that money, so you shouldn't benefit. Because what was happening was people were making millions of pounds on drug deals, spending 10 years inside and coming out to being millionaires.
Well, that's the deal. How about you make a lot of money and then you trade that for doing a little bit of time, but when you get out, you're set. I mean, that's kind of like the way I look at that is like in some of those cases, it's almost like, would you be willing to do 2 years in prison for $20 million? Maybe.
I would do 2 years in prison for $2 million. So I'd do it for $1 million. So what they started doing was saying, no, this is what you've earned, so you now pay this back to us.
Yeah.
Now, one of the things that influence a POCA is what they can actually get. So it's all right proving I've earned £5 million or £2 million in the last 5 years or whatever it is. But if I haven't got £2 million to give you, you're not going to get it, are you?
Yeah, that's true.
But if I've got £1 million in property and £250,000 in cash, then what they'll do is they'll go for a POCA for £1.25 million because they know they can achieve that goal.
Yeah, I see.
If he's got cash seized, then they will go for a POCA for the amount of cash.
I see.
Because they know they can get it.
It's right there. Yeah.
It's there. It's tangible. Huh. It's physically touchable.
Yeah.
There's no need for court proceedings on properties or any messing around. The cash is there. The cash is done.
Yeah.
So I am assuming, and it is a big assumption, but I am assuming that the judge has looked at the case and gone, right, there's no real harm in the sense that we've had nobody die, we've had nobody have a problem with that. You run a legitimate business that supports people and employs people. You have a family, and every penny you've earned over the last 8 months, the police are taking off you in the pocket hearing anyway.
So we're doing pretty good. We're going to make $128,000 off you.
So I see no real reason to punish you further is effectively how I read that.
I see. Is that a common thing to in the UK for things to go that route?
POCA is becoming more and more important. POCA in lieu of a prison sentence, not so much. I find this quite unusual, but definitely POCA is playing a bigger and bigger. I spoke at one of the police conferences last year about the influence that POCA is having on court cases.
Oh, really? Interesting.
And the influence that POCA is having on the pursuit of court cases.
Yeah.
So one of the things that's considered, see what happens with that money, well, make it nice round figures. So what happens with the money is it's divided up. So for argument's sake, you've got three entities involved in the prosecution of a criminal. You've got the courts, you've got the police, and you've got what we call the Crown Prosecution Service.
Mm-hmm.
So the court is obviously the establishment in which the hearing is tried. The police do the investigation and the arrest and the enforcement of the law. The Crown Prosecution Service are the solicitor element that put the case together and prosecute the case in court.
Yeah.
If I got done for 6 million POCA, 3 million would go to the government. The 3 million that's left over, 1 million would go to the prosecuting court, 1 million would go to the arresting police, and 1 million would go to the Crown Prosecution Service that operate in that area.
Okay.
So for a police force that are very strapped on budgets, poker is a way of financing their business.
Yeah, yeah, that's what I'm seeing too.
It is. It's just a fact of life. And this is what I talked about. I talked about how poker was influencing criminal prosecution. Because, and how police were starting to look at cases from a point of view of what financial reward can I get for prosecuting this case.
You kind of alluded to that in previous cases we've discussed. I could see that.
So that's where it's not as blatant as that, but it is starting to influence to a degree.
Yeah.
So you tend to find now that the small drug cases or drug cases that don't have a lot of financial revenue either don't get prosecuted or they're quite happy to do a really shitty plea bargain.
Yeah, okay.
So it'll be a case of, right, I caught you with $2,000 worth of steroids. I've got no evidence of supply. I've got no evidence of anything else, but there's no way you're telling me that's personal. We're not accepting it. And you go, okay, well, I'll cop a plea as long as it's non-custodial and I'm bound over 12 months and that's it. And the court will, the Crown prosecutors will go, yeah, that's fine because we get technically a guilty.
Yeah.
And we don't have to spend any money on the case.
Okay.
So they look at it from a point of view of point scoring when they do cases prosecuted, cases won. Well, we prosecuted Scott and we won.
Yeah.
You look at it, well, I got caught, but I got away with a slap on the wrist and fuck all. So I'm happy.
Yeah, yeah. I'm not going to jail, you know.
And everybody walks away fairly happy with it.
Okay.
And so that happens a lot with the lesser cases. As long as you can make it look like there's going to be a fight, give them an easy way out, they'll generally take it.
So one more question. So this is the title of this article was Belfast Fitness Shop Owner Who Sold Steroids to Customers Avoids Prison. What the hell is a fitness shop? Is that a gym or is that a supplement store? I can't tell. I don't know what that means.
Supplement store. But okay. It may be that he sold equipment as well.
Okay. Fitness shop.
I know a few supplement stores that do have, you know, they'll sell bars or they'll sell a few dumbbells or they'll sell some basic equipment as okay. well.
See, I couldn't tell. That's language I'm not familiar with over there. Fitness shop.
You don't speak English. We have this problem every week. I mean, last week you were talking about prostitutes and smoking one of them. And, you know, and this week you don't understand what a fitness shop is.
Scott's Fitness Shop. I'm going to open
that
up.
It's a shop that sells items related to fitness.
And apparently steroids, which are technically related to fitness.
Yeah. So, you know, you could buy your headbands and your short shorts from this shop so that you can go running with your anklets on.
And some DECA. All right, let's get to commercial break. We'll come back with some listener questions. Hey, what's up, guys? I'm going to talk a little bit about our sponsors, and then we will get right back to the program. So, hope you guys are doing good. Hope you're reaching your goals. Hope your gym's open. I'm reaching my goals. At least I'm working toward them, and it feels good. You know, I've talked about it on the shows, so you guys know what's up. I'm trying to gain muscle again, and it feels so fun because it's the first time I've actually tried to gain muscle in a few years now. What am I? 37.6 pounds up now from what I was a year ago. And granted, I was dieting a year ago. But I haven't tried to gain muscle, and I haven't been this big now in years. So it's fun, and I'm definitely feeling strong. It's good. So, you know, a big part of this is the training. In fact, I think that's a big, big factor. And then the nutrition and a little gear, not much. We'll say like a smidgen of gear. And supplements, which, you know, that's like kind of like the final factor there, right? And in part, I kind of put that in with food too. And of course, I'm using supplements from our sponsor, TrueNutrition.com. You know, high quality, third party tested, meaning you get what they say that you're getting. And they're owned by a guy, one of the most honest people in our industry, and smart dudes too, Dante Trudell. So you're getting good quality supplements, you know. And on top of that, if these are things that you would buy anyway, if you get them from TrueNutrition.com and you use our code, which is advices, then you directly support our programming. I'm honestly, you know, at home putting in hours a day, every day on these podcasts. And I love doing it. You know, it's a lot of fun. But obviously, I got to get some sort of return, right?
to continue doing this. So I appreciate you guys supporting our programming by shopping with our great sponsors, because that allows me to keep doing this. And I appreciate you guys listening too. It's a lot of fun doing these shows and sharing all this stuff with you. Our other sponsor is getazoth.com, and we have a code for them too. Advice is 10. You can go to either that website, or you can go to the Amazon link in our show notes. Basically some of the coolest nootropics that are out there on the market right now. Azoth 2.0. It's a fantastic product. I've enjoyed that for like 2 years now. And now I'm experimenting with Total Focus, which contains new supplement. It's winning all sorts of supplement awards, Zynamite. So Zynamite, as you guys probably heard me talk about, is a dopamine reuptake inhibitor, meaning it keeps more dopamine in your body. And dopamine is a book I'm checking out. It's called The Molecule of More. It's about dopamine is what makes you desire. Dopamine is what makes you want to achieve. Dopamine is what makes you want to like keep making money or keep doing whatever you're doing and be the best at it. Keeps you on task, really. Keeps you focused on the chase. And it's interesting to experiment with that. You can strategically, increase your dopamine where you need it to be, when you want it to be, and kind of get like a performance enhancing edge. Like I'm performance enhancing my podcasting and my nutrition work with my clients. I make sure that I'm not taking it at other times, like when I want to sleep, for instance. But yeah, so I'm having a lot of fun with that. If you guys want to check out some cool nootropics, you can do so using our code at our sponsor. That's advices10 at getazoth.com. Thanks for listening to me talk about all this stuff, guys. And thank you. I mean that from the bottom of my heart. Thank you for listening to our shows. Welcome back to Drugs and Stuff with Dave Crossland. I'm Scott McNally. Of course, as you just saw on our commercials, all our programming is brought to you by getazoth.com and truenutrition.com. We've got a bunch of listener questions. And to start us out, Steve had a question for you, Dave. I know that you answered this on the previous episode, but what does 50 milligrams a week get you to for blood totals and test?
It's putting me at about 25, 26
ml. Okay.
And I'm happy with that. That's fine. I feel fine on it. I don't have an issue. I feel normal. I don't feel supercharged. I don't think anything special. I just feel normal.
No kidding. Okay.
I'll be retesting in 2 weeks, so I will let people know what my numbers come back in 2 weeks' time when I retest.
Okay.
Can we get sponsored by Dunkin' Donuts or something?
Ooh, that'd be good. I like Starbucks better personally, but if you want Dunkin' Donuts, we can talk to them.
Well, Krispy Kreme.
Krispy Kreme. Okay.
Timmy Hortons. Now that would be a sponsorship.
Dave spent time in Canada, so he's a big Tim Hortons fan, I think.
Well, there's one in Manchester as well. We've got one over here now.
Oh, nice. Nice. All right, so let's start here. Does Cialis run daily or every other day actually help impede the growth of smooth muscles, such as your heart?
No. In fact, I believe it's beneficial.
Yeah, so it would help. It would help you to not get an enlarged heart is what he's asking.
In view of against steroid use, I doubt it will be that equalizing.
Yeah, okay.
That's a bit like saying, if I'm on 700 mg a test, can I take DIM to stop my estrogen? DIM has a positive impact on estrogen, yes, but not in viewed with, huge increases in testosterone.
Okay. Doctors are currently told not to use Cialis in patients with heart failure, including low pressure, low blood pressure. Okay, I don't see anything offhand. I wonder if there's something to this, though.
My understanding is Cialis is beneficial to the heart if your heart is healthy, but once you have problems with your heart...
Yeah.
And heart failure is a very good example because basically, generally, heart failure is that your heart can't beat correctly. If you then increase blood flow, which Cialis does do, then you're going to put more pressure on the heart when it's already in a state that it's struggling to beat correctly and keep up with demand.
I see.
Heart failure is often contributed or a result of arterial fibrillation. Well, some form of irregular heartbeat will often result in heart failure.
Yeah.
That's what triggered mine, that and being 400 pounds and taking shitloads of gear.
yeah. There's some factors there.
Yeah, mine's much improved, actually.
Good.
Yeah, I'm not quite signed off, but I think when I finish dropping this weight and everything, I probably will be.
Nice.
Yeah, 42 pound down.
Hell yeah, that's freaking great, man. Okay, how about Proviron for TRT? Question about Proviron being added to TRT in Europe, especially, is this in a way sustainable long term? Especially given Proviron's possible negative impact on lipids.
I don't know. It's the honest answer. on the surface of it, I see no issue with Proviron, and I have seen bloods with people running Proviron where it has helped very much. Helped with estrogen management and generally kept things quite neat and tidy. Obviously, there is the added benefit that it will increase free tests, so in generally you seem to feel like you're getting more out of what you're taking.
Sure.
Regards negative on lipids, I've not seen anything as to how impacting that is. So I've seen plenty of studies around the impacts of AIs on lipids and, you know, and sort of 25% negative impact from ADEX and stuff like that. But I've not seen anything around Proviron, and that's purely because I haven't looked, if I'm honest. So put a note on that for next week, and I will have a look.
What do you mean, put a note on that? Like on my, make a, like one of these post-its, put it on my screen?
Yeah, just make sure you remember that, because you know I'll forget. No, I'll make a note for Proviron.
We got a comment from Keith Allen saying Dave plus is looking good.
Plus and minus in TRT. I'll have a look at it for next week, because to be honest, I don't know. I'm not enough up on it at the moment. It's been too long since I looked at it.
All right. We actually got a couple comments on the last episode, people saying, Dave, you look like you're getting into shape. So it's apparently noticeable now. Tucker Hughes, let's see, that was his question on Cialis that we had a minute ago. How about we go here then? Matt asks, is a simple dose of 3 to 4 units of Humalog twice a day a good enough dose to take pressure off the pancreas when using growth hormone secretagogues, such as MK677, not using the insulin as a main growth factor, but basically a supplement to keep my healthy, to keep me healthy, hence the small dose?
No, because you're not using it in the right way.
Yeah?
M667 lowers insulin sensitivity.
Okay.
So what you should be doing is protecting insulin sensitivity.
Oh.
Not, which you're not going to do by running insulin. It's only going to compound the problem. Even at a low dose, you're not... The difference between, and if I get this right, let me form my thoughts on this. When you're taking huge amounts of carbs, you start pumping out shitloads of insulin. So as a result, that can start to desensitize the receptors and the beta cells can get hammered. So you take a small amount of insulin to give the beta cells a little bit of a break. Yes, that's established. The difference with MK is you're coming from the opposite end of the problem. So you've got a chemical causing desensitization, but your insulin levels are normal.
Yeah.
By hyping your insulin levels artificially, your own insulin levels are going to be suppressed. That's not going to really help the sensitivity issue. What you'd probably be better doing is running something like berberine.
Okay, yeah.
Which would help main, or periodically put in a keto week in, or a couple of ketos week in. Also, increasing cardio. Cardio helps with insulin sensitivity as well. So it's rather than increase the level of insulin in your body to compensate for the low sensitivity, mm-hmm. it's worked towards increasing the insensitivity.
Yeah, I see what you mean.
Whereas you can't do that as easily. If you increase sensitivity while you're using huge amounts of carbs, yeah. it will just keep driving it down and driving it down and driving it down. The MK works from the back end rather than the insulin working from the front end, if you know what I mean. It's that sort of opposite approach to it.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, versus you're talking about fixing the issue versus band-aiding it, really, yeah. is kind of something along those lines.
One is a compensation where the other is a prevention.
Yeah. Yeah,
I think that's probably the best way of describing it.
You know what, too? He could test his blood glucose, see where it's at before he does this, and then start the berberine and then see what his results are from that. You could directly yeah. see if it's affecting you. This isn't something where you have to, like, just wonder or think that you feel better, feel like you're healthier. You know what I mean? You could actually check yourself and see for your, you know, what's going on.
BG Me is the cheapest chips. They really are. They're dollars. Or in this case, pounds. They're not a lot of money at all.
Cheapest chips. You said something else that I thought, they're a real hot potato. They have a real hot potato for DNP. Ooh, we have a DNP question too. I'll have to pull that one up. While I look for that, let's go to the next one here. This is from Joshua Todd. I've heard there is a push to move people on replacement therapy to Clomid from testosterone. Any truth to this? What is the international pulse on TRT methods at the moment, Dave? Give us the Euro scoop.
It's all over. I know a couple of years ago the FDA was making a lot of noise about encouraging the reduction of the availability of TRT to patients and of trying to encourage doctors to be less liberal with their TRT treatments.
Yes.
Danny said last week that he'd seen the ranges in the States periodically come down.
True.
To reduce the level of TRT. But the other thing is that if they're dropping the upper and the lower, that would also create more TRT. No, sorry. Yeah, if they're dropping the upper and lower, it would decrease the number of TRT patients qualifying chemically as well.
Yes.
In the UK, we've seen the top end stay the same, but we have seen the low end drop down a little bit. But TRT, from a prescription basis, is incredibly difficult to get over here.
Mm, yeah.
There does seem to be a general move across the board to dissuade TRT. Why? Well, someone's no doubt going to turn around and say, because they don't want us all to be hench and take over the world. I really don't think that's the driving factor.
Yeah, yeah.
I think the driving factor is most likely cost.
Okay.
One of the big hot potatoes in TRT treatment
yeah.
is, does TRT cause an increase in heart issue? And the studies are all over the place. There's lots of studies say they do. There's lots of studies say they don't. And one of the problems in that is that the TRT dosing is so broad, particularly stateside, because you've got so many private clinics offering the service. Whereas in the UK, predominantly our TRT services are the National Health Service. There are private clinics, but they're not. It's not like. I mean, I remember, I think it might have been Danny that said it. Someone messaged him about which TRT clinic do I pick because there's hundreds around by me.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't think the UK has 20, 30 private clinics in the whole fucking country.
You're kidding me.
Not in actual private clinics. Oh. There are private health services, you know, through private medical insurance.
Yeah.
But the number of private practice TRT clinics is very, very, they are about, but they're very, very minimal.
Well, the whole country is small, though, too, so there is that. I mean, you guys are like, what, the size of Rhode Island, I think, right? You can drive in the UK from one end to the other in under an hour. That's a fact.
Well, you wouldn't know about driving because you'd be too busy getting on your horse and wearing your hat and your cowboy boots to get from one place to another, wouldn't you?
I'm just making shit up and I'm saying it like it's a fact right now.
I know. You'll be very popular next week. You'll have a cult following. So, yes, there does appear to be a general restriction of TRT supply. I've always felt that the big driving factor behind it was cost, because obviously if someone goes on TRT, that's them for life.
Yeah.
That's someone that's drug dependent for the rest of their life.
That makes sense to me. Yeah.
So for us, with a national health, so a centrally funded health service, that's a huge financial burden.
Yeah.
State side, I'm not so sure why the FDA is such a thing for it. I really don't. Mm-hmm. I mean, the pharma companies love it. I mean, they make a fucking fortune. But I'm really not sure. But I think as well, the problem is that the TRT boom's only, very much like the steroid dosing boom, it's only been really been in the last 5-10 years. And TRT popularity has spiked massively in the last 5 years. So I think we're another 5-10 years down the line before we start to really see, you know, the impact of these current trends. We are seeing more and more health-related issues with recreational steroid use. I don't know if we're going to see more and more health-related issues with TRT use. We may do, we may not. On a... I don't know. And a story today.
Yeah?
Yeah, about a bodybuilder. It's an old one. This is about 20 years ago.
Okay. Well, let's put this in the cutting-edge news portion of the show then.
Okay. Do we have a cutting-edge news portion of the show?
Guys, it's time for some cutting-edge bodybuilding news. We do now.
Okay. This was an emergency situation where a bodybuilder, a very obvious bodybuilder, very developed, very lean, was collected by a paramedic because he was non-responsive.
Okay.
He was rushed to a hospital, and this story comes from the paramedic involved in the situation. So the decided... and I don't know why, I don't know what symptoms related to this, but what they did was they opened his chest bone clean up straight away. So they separated his ribs, cut him down the sternum and opened him up.
Holy crap.
And as soon as they did it, his heart exploded.
Huh?
His heart was that enlarged that it was pressured against his rib cage and couldn't beat.
This sounds to me like an urban legend.
I'm just telling you the story I heard. I didn't say it was true. I just said this is the story I heard from a paramedic who attended.
Okay.
So the story goes, and this was what the surgeon has said, his heart was so enlarged that it had pressured against the rib wall.
Yeah.
And as soon as the rib wall was removed and released, the heart expanded so rapidly that it actually tore.
Yeah.
Now, I was saying, thinking 20 years ago, I can't think of a drug on this planet that would do that apart from myostatin or myostatin inhibitor.
Yeah.
Apparently, it pushed his lungs to one side and other parts of his internal organs, and it was so hugely developed was his heart that the only thing that was actually keeping it in one piece was his rib cage. And when his rib cage removed, it was, you know, almost like...
It just plopped out.
Yeah, it just sort of expanded so quickly that the actual surface of the heart tore and it ripped apart.
Huh. I'm going to call bollocks on this one.
I really want to go and have a proper conversation with the surgeon involved and dig more, but...
All right. I'm going to hold off on this DMP question because there's some stuff I want to look into on it first. Well, I'll make note on this one. We shall tackle it on the next episode. Let's see here, though. I know that we had a couple other things. Let's see. Dave, I believe that they're going to try to do a show here in a few weeks, IFBB, they're going to go back into contest season. It had been shut down. It looks like the Tampa Pro will be happening after all. Yeah. It's in about 3 weeks from now.
Yeah. I saw some, I don't know if you are aware of a guy called Cornelius Parkin.
Absolutely. I am. Yeah.
You know, Colin.
Yeah.
Yeah, Con posted something today about he's got a few athletes competing in about 3 weeks' time.
Okay, it's probably for that show then.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. He sold his gym, hasn't he?
Oh, I don't know. Had he?
Yeah, he sold his gym, apparently.
Okay. Apparently that was it. We don't have any other questions, Dave.
Oh, shit.
I know. That's it.
I'll go back to Pony on my holiday.
Where are you going?
France, Belgium, and Switzerland.
Huh. Because that's all pretty much about a 45-minute drive from you.
Yeah, it's 10 minutes down the road.
That's what I thought. You guys are all so close together. Yeah.
I just drive on the bridge over the English Channel into France, and the rest of it's peace based. Doesn't take long at all.
Nice.
Yeah, I'm going away in my motorhome, my little caravan-y thing.
Beautiful.
And we're just going to have a... I just want a break. It's not like I've been hard work. I just need a change of scenery.
Yeah.
I'm sick of looking at the same four fucking walls. So I'm going to swap these four walls for four walls of the car.
There you go. That'll be fun, man. If we can, I would love to try to do some sort of on-the-road podcasting with you. That would be amazing.
I am trying to time it because we're hopefully spending about 4 days on the shores of Lake Geneva in Switzerland.
Okay.
So I want to try and time it so we can do the podcast from Geneva.
Oh, that would be great. Oh, I did find one more question.
Cool as fuck. Go on then.
Okay. So I did have one more here. I was digging around. I was like, where did it go? There it is, though. This is from Tommy. He says, do all steroids elevate blood pressure? Deca 1 milliliter and test 400 at 1 milliliter a week raised mine. What would be better?
Yes, they do. But different compounds do it to different degrees. And obviously lifestyle and individual and genetics and all these play a factor in this.
Yeah.
It's not necessarily going to elevate blood pressure to a problematic level. One thing that generally kept very well in me when I was training hard was blood pressure.
I'm surprised by that too, with all the water put on.
Yeah. My blood pressure was always decent. And I put that down to two things. One, I kept a very lean diet, which kept my cholesterol in very good condition.
Yeah.
I like to think I trained hard. As soon as my training started to become lackluster and not as focused and my training started to get there, my blood pressure went through the fucking roof on minuscule amounts in comparison to what I used to run.
Yeah.
But I do think that Deca is probably going to result in less blood pressure than test. Some of it's tied into the increase in RBC and the thickening of the blood. Some of it's tied into aromatization and estrogen and increased water.
Yeah.
So there's a few factors that play into the increase in blood pressure. So your DHTs don't seem to be as prolific at raising red cell counts. And obviously your non-aromatizing compounds don't then have that estrogen factor adding to blood pressure. So I would have said that Deca is probably going to be milder on that side of things than test.
Yeah, I think, you know, just to like back up and talk about steroids and blood pressure, I think there's probably a few things that can cause this, right? I know one would be the fact that steroids can increase mineral retention. And so with more minerals, you get more water retention. So let's look at fixing that. You know, if you have high blood pressure on 400 test and 1 milliliter Deca, whatever that is, maybe it's, for all I know with these UGLs now, that's like 700 milligrams per milliliter nowadays, you know?
I'm guessing it'll be around 300 now.
Yeah, there you go. Two to three. So it's not a high cycle, 400 test, maybe 2 to 3 Deca. You could probably do something nutritionally to work on that a little bit. What's your water intake like? Dr. Scott's book, Be Your Own Bodybuilding Coach, which I have on the shelf over there. You know, he says that about 1 gallon is about the average amount of water that you need just to kind of make baseline happen in your life and your body. So are you getting a gallon a day? If not, I would definitely get up to that and see how that helps you. The more water you drink, the more you're going to flush those minerals through. And with an increased mineral retention, you're going to want to drink more fluids. So there's that. Other thing being steroids that are going to have like more of a central nervous system stimulating effect. Like I found Tren, trend enanthate, especially as that builds up, guys tend to get more issues with things like anxiety and things like more rapid heart rate.
I get where you're going with that. Yeah.
Maybe stay away from those things that are going to be like more like, you know, the drugs that would be higher side effects, you know, things like that, things like Halo, you know.
And I think that's more of an indirect mechanism. It's more of a secondary mechanism, but I get where you're going with that. If you're anxious and your heart rate is elevated because you're anxious, your blood pressure is going to be elevated because you're anxious.
Yeah, yeah. So just a couple thoughts. I was just trying to think of like, well, what are the reasons? Because realistically, I think that any steroid has the propensity to increase your blood pressure, really, if you're taking it at a, you know, super physiological dose.
Mm-hmm. Yes, definitely.
On a related note, I don't know where this question is at. We never answered it. I want to say it was on a couple podcasts ago. It was posted on a live feed. But somebody asked about anxiety and steroids, anxiety and testosterone. Have you heard of anybody getting anxiety while taking, like, how about even like TRT?
I don't think I've...
I can't think of anybody on TRT, but it's like when you get into those higher doses, you know?
Yeah, I mean, that boils down to what dose is TRT, doesn't it, as well?
Yeah.
True. And that whole conversation, again. I've seen people's quality diminish over time, even on low doses. So I've seen people on lowish doses, your sort of 200, 250 a mg week type range, that 4 or 5 years of using at that sort of level, and they will admit to life just being a bit flatter, everything being a little bit dumbed down, responses, emotions, everything being a little bit just a little bit concerned. Anxiety is possible at basically any dose that's going to start pushing you out of range can start to create anxiety from any compound.
Sure.
Obviously, certain compounds are particularly bad for it, trend being the big one. Nandrolone has a big impact in that. Test is another one that is fairly active in that. And then when you get down to like your primos and stuff, it's much, much more subtle or less pronounced.
Yeah.
And I think this is another thing where, you know, it's like we all talk about our first cycle and feeling supercharged and feeling on top of the moon and feeling absolutely amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And getting by on 3 hours sleep a night and shagging like a rabbit and still growing, you know.
Yeah.
And yet you ask someone in the 5th, 6th, 7th, 8th, 9th, 10th cycle and they will say it's nowhere near like that anymore.
Yeah. I'll tell you that I could remember the first time I ran trend, and I did suffer from like mood issues from that, major sleep disturbances, which added to mood issues. You're not going to feel good if you're getting shitty sleep and having weird dreams every night.
But do you remember your first cycle full stop?
Well, my first cycle full stop was 15 milligrams of D-ball for 4 weeks. So I do remember that vividly.
That wasn't a cycle.
I gained 20 pounds, Dave. I mean, it wasn't all muscle, but I will say that that's the way I felt on the first time of trend. But the last time I ran trend, I ran substantially more and I was fine. Like I didn't, you know, I've gotten used to it. I think maybe am I better at handling that androgen, that high androgen feel? I don't know, maybe, but I do think that I'm become a little desensitized to it as well.
I think one of the things with trend is what I found with trend is that people go, I'm fine. Oh shit. I'm not fine now.
Yeah.
Okay. And I'm running the same dose I've always run. I've always been fine with it before. All of a sudden now it's a problem.
Huh.
And that's just the degenerative effect that trend has in your brain and the fact that the toxin and the damage builds up to a point where it then becomes a problem.
Okay.
But what I was meaning was, you know, most people on their first, they do the first test cycle, 400 mega, 500 mega test a week.
Yeah.
And they feel like Superman. They feel they're a dog with two dicks.
Yeah.
And they feel like,
Okay.
Yeah. That's a good saying, though.
That's good.
And they feel like Superman. You know, they're bouncing off the ceiling.
Yeah.
You speak to that person 5, 6, 7 cycles later, and it'll be, no, I don't feel like that anymore.
Yeah.
Everything's a bit, meh, now.
Yeah.
And I personally feel that the long-term use, and I put this down to predominantly Deca, but I do think Tesla's a play as well, as actually, if I had a range of emotion that was there from there, from happiness to sadness or from anger to elation or whatever you want to put in that range,
yeah,
that my steroid use has done that with the range.
You think that? Do you think that steroids have done that to you in general? That like your life in general is now has less range because you've used steroids or just using steroids?
I think there's a contributing factor from the gear in the fact that my emotional range is not as great as it used to be.
Okay, wow. Huh.
Yes, I do. The science backs it. The science does back it.
Yeah.
The brain studies do back a downregulation of brain activity and a downregulation of cerebellum and a thinning of the cerebellum and stuff like that. And disruptions and permanent disorder within the sort of magnetia and your emotional control centers within your brain.
Yeah, I do, I definitely.
There's age that pulls a factor into that as well, and there's obviously the lessons of life that pull into a factor in that. But I mean, really, my life now is the best it's ever been.
Yeah.
From both financial security, emotional relationship,
friends. You're friends with me now.
I've never had any friends.
You're friends with me, so your life is doing a lot better now. We talk every day.
Acquaintances.
Friends.
People I know.
Close friends.
Acquaintance.
Best friends.
BFF.
Yeah. All right. Well, listen, let's get out of here. I'm excited to have you go on your trip, and I want you to podcast from a little bistro with a French guy and a baguette.
We're not actually spending that much time in France. We're just sort of driving through it.
And doing a podcast from a bistro.
I will try and at least do something from somewhere a bit original if I can.
Get a baguette.
Even if it's scenery-wise, I'll get something in the background that's dramatic or something. I'll try.
I'll get you a little beret when you're in France.
What, and a string of onions?
What's that?
And a stripe and a stripy top?
Yes, exactly, exactly. We'll have you wear that when you're in France. That'll be great.
Oh, where's fucking Wally?
All right, guys. Well, for another episode of Drugs and Stuff with Dave Crossland, I'm Scott McNally. Our programming is all brought to you by TrueNutrition.com and GetAzoth.com. Guys, we will see you soon.